Mental Health Monday
on Radio City Talk
with Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Radio City Talk.
It's Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Once again, thanks for joining us on the programme. Another great guest lined up to talk her through their mental health journey. This one will touch on football, it'll touch on music, and we'll also focus on OCD and CBT. If you're wondering what those things stand for, you will find out over the course of the next half hour or so. Mental Health Monday from Radio City Talk, discussing mental health openly on the radio. It's what we do. If you want to get involved in the show, you can drop me an email at mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. Let's meet this week's guest. Ryan Ferguson is with us all the way from the Wirral. Ryan, great to see you. How are you, sir?
Yeah, thanks, Mick. Yeah, great.
We're going to talk about your links with both football and music.
Okay.
But can we start by talking about OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder? Because I think in terms of people's knowledge, they will think it means certain things. They'll have probably preconceptions around light switches and things like that, born out of things they'll have seen on TV or read about on the internet as well. But it can affect different people in different ways. What for you does obsessive compulsive disorder mean?
Like you say, there's that association that you see on the soap opera of that's how they can portray it, of, you know, the light switch or leaving the house at a certain time. For myself, I don't actually struggle with the rituals so much. For me, OCD is sort of a very... It's about processes. Like, I get very sort of obsessed with processes and details and plans and schemes. So if I have an idea, I can't settle until I've devised a system to sort of lead to that goal. Or that, you know, it can be anything really. And it's just you know, I struggle with spontaneity. Things have to be planned and you know, to the very like granular details of any process, and it's a draining, you know, it's a draining thing to deal with. And I feel like it wasn't recognized early for myself, and I think that's what sort of led to other conditions further down the road.
Yeah. So in terms of that, when you get diagnosed with OCD, it's known as a disorder. So are you told that that's just how your brain is programmed? Do you have OCD because of something that's happened? Can you develop it over time? Did you get that explained to you?
No, I didn't really. A lot of it, I suppose, does come down to sort of personality traits. And I think OCD, it can be sort of like an extension of, you know, if you're inclined to be detail orientated, it can go too far, and you sort of fall into that trap, so to speak. You know, whether... You know, doctors have probably done far more research than myself. There probably is sort of like psychiatric sort of analysis of it. But for myself, yeah, it's you know, getting that diagnosis was real eye opener. I thought that once I got that diagnosis, it was, you know, that it made sense. Everything else that I'd experienced, it sort of made sense. And I just wish I'd got that diagnosis earlier, really.
It's amazing that the number of people who come on the programme and talk through their lived experience of feeling a certain way and feeling a certain way about themselves and the life and the world around them, and simply having a label you can put on it can have a huge impact, because you suddenly, oh, right, now it all seems to make sense. That explains, you know, sometimes labels putting on things, you know, can be a negative thing. But for a lot of people who have had an experience that they've not been able to put their finger on, for someone to say, well, it's this.
Yeah, I think that's...
Must be a relief as much as anything.
Yeah, to a certain extent. I think it's a fine line. You mentioned sort of therapy at the top, CBT, which is cognitive behavioural therapy. That's something I've had a lot of myself. And I think it's a very fine line in terms of, once you construct that narrative of this is what's making you feel a certain way, it can be easy to sort of shoehorn everything into that narrative, and everything sort of fits into that scheme, and it can become quite lazy in terms of, you know, pointing everything to that one cause, and you have to challenge yourself. And I think in terms of therapy, the therapist that you get has to be, you know, that's a big decision to make, because you need somebody who challenges your sort of natural biases, and you need somebody who really just says, well, have you looked at it this way, rather than just confirming everything within that one sort of narrative.
When you experienced something and you're thinking, this is the OCD factor kicking in, do you find that you're able to sort of spot that or know that that's happening? Or do you find that just your life happens in a way in which if you then look back, you think, oh, they were the OCD characteristics?
Some days it can be you're in that sort of tunnel for 2 or 3 days of scheming and planning things, and it can be quite a dark place. And that's when you need a strong support network. I'm fortunate; I've got a great family around me who tend to pull me together again through those sort of 2 or 3 days where I'll just be somewhere else mentally. And I think for me, it's about putting boundaries in place after you've said, right, I've come through a difficult few days here. How can I correct that? It's that self analysis. And I think compartmentalizing things is a great management tool for OCD. So, for instance, you'll have, I find that if I have one room for writing, that really helps. One room for eating, one room for sleeping. And it's leaving that task in that room and not letting it tick over relentlessly in your mind. I think that's really helped me.
So when you get those dark days, those 2 to 3 days, what sort of things, how might that manifest itself? What might be going on both in your mind and sort of in your home at that time?
So for myself, I'm a passionate writer, and that's what I've always wanted to do. And it's just a relentless chain of ideas in my head. And I can't rest until I either get that idea out or I devise some kind of mechanism to remember it and deliver on it. And I think that sense of expectation that I place on myself, it's quite difficult. So, for instance, if I have an idea for a project of starting a website, for instance, or starting a podcast, wherever it may be, I will sit there and I'll work backwards from the goal that I want to achieve all the way down to the minute details of planning things out years in advance, and we need this to achieve this, and that will lead to that, and etc. And it can just be, I can be totally lost in those details for days, writing things down, just typing away, and it must be so difficult for the people around you, to be fair, because you're not present, you're not with them in the room, so to speak, fully, and it's a constant battle, it really is. And you need that support network, as I say, to really sort of, pull you back in line.
In terms of the things that you write, and if you write down ideas or scribble ideas down during one of those periods, do you go back and look back at them? Do they make sense? Are they something which when you look at you go, oh, actually, this kind of makes sense, or are they mixed up? Do they reflect, a mind which isn't in sort of full working order, or do you sometimes find there's a combination of both?
No, for myself, I suppose everybody's journey is different, but for myself, I'm quite thankful that I think it's just the sheer volume of ideas that I have manifest itself in obsessive ways. I think the actual ideas themselves, tend to be, pretty sound in terms of, having some kind of objective that leads to something I want to achieve. And I think it's that fine line between sort of creativity and madness almost. It's been well documented. And it's, I suppose it's something that I deal with myself in terms of, those edges of like extreme creativity. It's like, it can be quite a dark place in terms of, the drive that you put on yourself to sort of complete a task or achieve something, fulfill your potential. It can be quite a saga.
So when you talked before about you got one place to write, another place to eat, are you able to think, maybe I'm spending a little bit too much time on this prep time or these ideas, I'm going to leave this room physically now and go and have a drink or go and get something to eat. Is that part of the way you deal with it?
Well, I think that's the next step for me is really sort of setting those boundaries. I think setting the boundaries is one thing, but actually adhering to them, that's the bit that takes a lot of work. And that's where, the support network is, again, I keep saying it, it's key, really. And certain people can speak to you on a level that just penetrates that mind smog, that's what I call it, and it gets through to you, and it's like, right, okay, I really need to just move on now. I need to do one thing at a time and sort of give myself a breather. You know, one thing I'm guilty of is I don't sort of appreciate how long life is. You know, if I give myself sort of like a project or an idea, I think I have to do it right now because why? I don't really know. But, you know, you've got so long to achieve these things. It's just taking a moment just to slow down and just do it more naturally, I guess.
We've got Ryan Ferguson with us on Mental Health Monday, who is currently receiving CBT to manage his OCD, a medication as well. How have you found the medication?
Yeah, it's been quite a difficult journey, to be fair. You know, I've tried a few different medications. I started on sort of sertraline. We mixed the doses, trying to get sort of a happy medium. At times it worked, at times I found it was quite invasive in terms of my concentration. That was the side effect that I dealt with. So, you know, with doctors, we've reviewed the situation and, you know, I've changed to fluoxetine now, which is an antidepressant. I find that, some days it can be really sort of hit and miss, I find myself. But generally it's done wonders for me in terms of just giving me that respite to analyze myself. And I think the key thing is with medication and any recovery really from mental health, it has to be sort of a holistic approach. It can't just be, here's these pills, you know, these will make you feel better. It's like, I view it as the medication gives you that breathing room to then critically analyze yourself. I think that structured solitude really is one of the most important things I can convey to people, is giving yourself that time just to really analyze what's going on yourself and who are you and what you actually want to achieve and what's stopping you from doing that. And I think you have to cut out other things in your life. So one of the things I've, you know, changes I've made is totally cut out alcohol. It's nearly a year now where I've just not drank at all. And I think those are the things that the medication has allowed me to sort of see. And I've made those changes because of the medication, because it's given me that sort of respite to actually analyze what I'm doing with my life.
You mentioned before that ahead of the diagnosis of OCD that you felt that it had led on to maybe other mental health issues within your life. How were they manifesting themselves? Was that born out of that lack of label, of misunderstanding maybe of how you were viewing the world?
I think it's quite multifaceted really, in terms of I've always been naturally introverted, you know, with the reading and the writing. So I grew up on a council estate in Wirral, and my interests didn't necessarily fit with the conventional sort of council estate image. I was always the quiet one reading the book, and I was always more at home in the library than going out clubbing or whatever it may be. And I think that manifested itself in just a sense of otherness, really, just a constant sense of feeling different. And I think over time that sort of like coalesced into anxiety, chronic shyness, and, you know, it's cost me opportunities. You know, I had a place to study journalism at university, and, you know, I succeeded in getting there, John Moores, and I just came down to it, and I just couldn't, the anxiety was so strong, I just couldn't go through with it. And so I think that opportunity was probably stolen off me by mental health issues. And then obviously, you know, more recently, that sort of anxiety, OCD blend, you know, it went untreated, I suppose, undiagnosed. And that manifested itself in depression, which was another diagnosis. But like you say, once you get that label, it gives you something to sort of hold on to. You know, it may sound strange, but it gives you something to research, something to try and figure out. And I think that's crucial on the road to recovery.
I guess if you want to be a writer, Ryan, you just start writing, but then you've got to start thinking, well, what am I going to write and where's this going to take me? You thought, I'll write about something that I know. Beloved football club, Tranmere Rovers.
Well, definitely, yeah. So I've always sort of blogged and I've, you know, kept diaries, you know, for as long as I can remember. But, you know, with the Tranmere writing, we really hit on something, because, we developed sort of Planet Prentonia. That's the title of the book, and that's given from the name of this website that we launched in 2015. And it was all about telling the untold story of Tranmere. The mainstream perception is just that Tranmere is this small club. It's just like the little brother of Liverpool and Everton, just overlooked in the shadows. And I think what we managed to do with the blog was just really just explore the soul of the club like no one had ever done before. And the reception we had was just unbelievable on social media. We built a big following. And people just love the articles that we did. So the book really is just it's a display of gratitude, really, from myself. During those dark times where, you know, writing was, you know, a saviour for myself, I really started to appreciate more the support that people had shown to Planet Prentonia. So the idea of putting a book together was, you know, it was one that really excited me. And it's sort of it's in anthology format, so all the best articles, you know, are in there, fully updated, refreshed. And I've also managed to write sort of 13 new exclusive articles as well, bringing that story fully up to date. And yeah, I'm really pleased with what we've managed to achieve.
Because I think a lot of people, you said, you know, thinking about writing a book, a lot of people will be so sort of overawed by the idea of actually creating something of, I don't know how many words. What's the other word count?
82,000 words.
82. I mean, that's a frightening number of words, I think. I don't know how many words I speak in a day, but it seems like that 82,000 seems like a lot of words. In terms of the OCD, where did that fit in terms of how you were viewing the task, if you like, of creating a book? Did that fit in quite nicely?
So there was a lot of meltdowns. There was a lot of trouble. You know, I set myself a hard deadline if I wanted to get this book out before the season started. And that was probably a mistake in hindsight, because it just put so much pressure on myself to then, like I was saying before, once I've got that objective, then I'm planning backwards of I need to do this at this time on this day. I need to write this many words to fit into this scheme, and I'm going to market it in this way, and there's plans for everything. And before you know it, it can be quite overwhelming. But like you said, that my family, especially my girlfriend, has played a huge role in sort of channeling that creative drive that I've got, and putting a structure in place, a routine for writing. So I'm not just doing it at random points. I'm waking up early, I'm writing in the writing room, as I mentioned, and that structure really helped to manage the project.
Because actually, and it goes to show that actually, even if you're living with, you know, a diagnosed disorder like OCD, that you shouldn't think, oh, I can't write a book, or this isn't possible. Otherwise, the only people who would write books would be those of absolute sound mind. And to be honest, you don't see that many people like that.
Definitely, it's out there. It's one of the things I'm really keen to reiterate is the positive connotations of OCD, the detail orientated approach is brilliant. You know, if it's done in a disciplined manner and with the right safeguarding, the right boundaries in place, you can really create a lot of high quality content if you've got that drive, that, like I say, that relentless stream of ideas. If you can channel that into sort of a process that works for you, I think the future, you know, you can achieve anything. And like I would say, if anybody's out there struggling with OCD, you know, there is hope and there is a way out of it, that you can turn this into a positive.
I was going to say there's always a danger sometimes, isn't there, that people try and turn things into like a superpower, you know, it's like an X-Men thing and you just need to be able to control it. But actually what you've just described there is there are traits that you recognise in yourself, things that you do, and actually if you're able to get a grasp of them and control them, that can still definitely lead to a positive environment. Because people will naturally think, oh, it's got the word disorder in, therefore anything that comes from it will be negative.
Yeah.
But actually your description of it is actually slightly different, isn't
it? I think I see OCD, like certainly my sort of strain of OCD, if you like, it's like a surplus of ideas and a surplus of just ambition and drive, and that sort of becomes your life. It overtakes you, really, and you sometimes you forget about the other aspects of life, with your family, etc. So if you can channel that sort of creativity, and I think it could be a real huge benefit for companies, for any walk of life, really, you know, government, if it be, you know, whatever it may be, I think we can, if we can get the right safeguarding in place, I think there's a massive future for anybody who may be struggling.
And you're only young now, and the CBT and the medication is kind of ongoing now. Do you feel like, do you have a view of how, like, in 4 or 5 years' time you'll feel about it? Do you think that the situation will change? Do you think the CBT and the ongoing treatment that you've got there will help to continue to allow you to be in control, if you like, of where you're at?
Yeah, I'm quite thankful, really. I'm in a stable position at the moment, and I'm able to sort of look back on the last year and actually see the changes that I've made in my life and the place I'm in now, whereas 12 months ago, you know, I wouldn't even go out the house at some point. You know, I come home from work and I was just absolutely burnt out from, you know, the sheer exertion of the day, of the anxiety, of just the, you know, that constant voice in your mind. And I was sort of, yeah, I was, you know, at one point I was, it got really bad. I was in, I remember my dad had to call up Papyrus, which is a suicide prevention charity locally. And, that's when I just had no hope. I think that hopelessness is the darkest place you can be in. And I remember the guy on the end of the phone was just giving me instructions just to stay safe for that night. And that's what level we were dealing with at that point, 12 months ago. So to actually look at it now, the experiences I've had in the last 12 months, you know, it's done me some good in certain respects. Like, I know myself more now, and I'm less sort of geared towards, you know, trying to appease other people, and I'm more sort of focused on my goals and what I want to achieve. And I'm keen to say to people that, you know, if you are struggling in that sort of hopelessness, find your passion and whatever it may be. It could be the most sort of innocuous thing, like Tranmere Rovers, for instance. But find your passion and just pour your soul into that. And yeah, there's a way out.
Planet Prentonia is the name of the book, Prenton Park, where Tranmere Rovers play. Planet Prentonia is available now in paperback and Kindle ebook as well. I notice you're writing through the Mind Map and the team at themindmap.co.uk as well. You're also writing about music as well. Music was part of the recovery, right?
Oh, huge. Like I say, when you're in that sort of that dark place, sometimes words just can't penetrate that smog that you surround you. Even when your loved ones are speaking, sometimes you just don't hear it. You really don't. It's so dark. One thing that really helped me was the music. You know, it just saved me. You know, the emotion that's conveyed in music is just, it's unreal. And in particular, you know, the Libertines were the band that really sort of resonated with me. The lyrics just touched me on just a different level. And you know, during those dark times, yeah, the Libertines, I've wrote an article saying that they saved me, basically. You know, just that, something to cling on to when everything else just seems so desperate. And like you say, through the Mind Map, you know, Phil and Steve have been absolutely fantastic to give me the opportunity to put that mental health writing out there. And they sort of facilitated an interview with John Hassell, who's the bass player in the Libertines. And, you know, that was fantastic for me to just, you know, speak to John and just tell him about the journey I've been on. And he's actually invited us to go and meet the whole band at in Manchester when they're playing, and I think it's November. So yeah, the journey is quite incredible, really. And
they've had their own journey, it's probably fair to say, in and of themselves. And it was interesting to read the article to see how understanding he was of the idea of mental health and to see the world in a slightly different way. Particularly from, is he based in Scandinavia now?
Yeah, he lives in Denmark at the moment. So John's actually practicing Buddhism. So he finds that that's his way of sort of finding courage and energy in the morning to face the day. And he tries to sort of implement those values throughout the day. And I just found it fascinating that, you know, the way he's made those changes from the chaotic Libertines days of, you know, those associations with like Pete Doherty and you know, just the drugs and that type of vibe. But I think it's quite a misunderstood band in that respect. I think Pete gets a lot of negative press, and as he would say himself, a lot of it, you know, he understands, but the amount of people that he's probably saved with his writing, him and Carl, I think it's just, yeah, it deserves greater praise.
I was walking through Lime Street Station once, and Carl Barrett was stood there, and there was a girl that I was with at the time who used to work here, and I said, "Oh, there's your mate Carl," I said to her, thinking she won't clock on, and she ignored me, and I just went, "Look, it's Carl Barrett from the Libertines." He was with what was the name of the band he set up afterwards? It wasn't with the Libertines at the time.
The Jackals.
The Jackals. He was with the Jackals at the time.
Or Dirty Pretty Things.
It was one of those. And there she went running over. And proper embarrassing it was. But she had one of those moments of, "You mean everything to me."
We met him once outside Par Hall in Warrington, me and my brother. And Carl was absolutely fantastic. Like, he was thanking us for going to the gig. That's the kind of guy, you know. He really appreciates his fans, and it's fantastic.
Brilliant. That John Hassell interview is up on the themindmap.co.uk, themindmap.co.uk. Loads of great articles on there as well. The book is out now, Planet Prentonia. You're a Tranmere Rovers fan, so it's highs and lows, it's ups and downs. It's been mainly highs, so yeah, that can only continue, right, as a football fan. We'll see how things play out as well. There might need to be, you know, a second book.
Hopefully.
Or hopefully nothing of interest will happen at Tranmere for just a few, just where everything just settles down back in League One before the rise continues again. Ryan, thank you for your time. Thanks for sharing your journey with us. Really appreciate you getting on board. Where can people go and buy the book?
Yeah, so the book's available now on Amazon. You can get it in paperback and ebook formats. So just search Planet Prentonia on Amazon. Also you can access it through my website, which is ryanferguson.co.uk. Also on social media, so Ryan Ferguson HQ on Twitter, and also get it through the Mind Map as well, so check those guys out, and they've been really supportive in setting this stuff up for me, so yeah, I'm really appreciative of that.
The mindmap.co.uk, by the way, has got loads of great resources, a really good place to go with Phil and the team doing a fantastic work as well. If you want to find out more information about mental health services close to you, visit the Hub of Hope, hubofhope.co.uk, and that will find a directory of all the different organisations according to your postcode as well. So type that in, hubofhope.co.uk. There's an app that will use the location device on your phone as well that can do exactly the same thing. Mental Health Monday from Radio City Talk. Ryan Ferguson, this week's guest. Thanks for your time, Ryan. Great to see you.
Thanks, Mick.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
On Radio City Talk.